Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Thank you for tuning in. It's about 7 past the hour. How you feeling? Everybody okay? You know, this is Wednesday. This is church night. So, we're going to do a little bit of that, but also in the third hour, also a little bit of some of the impressions from, the impressionistic stuff from D.C. on Monday and Tuesday, where I hung out with a couple other people who were there to absorb, same thing I was, I guess, Bob Kincaid and a pterodactyl from RepublicanDirtyTricks.com. You're familiar, of course, with Bob Kincaid from Head On Radio Network. Ta-da! So it is Wednesday night. It is church night. We're going to do a little bit of a church night here momentarily. But I'm really intrigued with something that Sheila Sample sent me. She's one of the editors, or the editor, I'm not sure which, over at Op-Ed News. And she writes to me and says, Malloy, here's the deal. Bushies never give anything without getting something in return. The deal is to get the Mitster to name Jeb as his VP, just in case there's no broker convention, in which case a deal has been made with others to select Jeb as the Republican candidate for president. And that's the deal. Remember, you heard it here first. Hey, don't thank me. Least I can do, Sheila. Now, what she's talking about, George Herbert Herbert Bush is going to endorse Mitt Romney on Thursday, and so is his old lady. Not Romney's old lady. She's already endorsed him. But, the woman who's the daughter of, who's the guy and, her grandfather, the, black magic practitioner from Aleister Crowley. Aleister Crowley, right. It's his, that's his granddaughter? Is his granddaughter?
Supposedly,
right. Anyway, according to the Washington Post, former President George Herbert Derbert Bush will formally endorse Mitt Romney's presidential bid tomorrow, blah, blah, blah. And Romney, or I should say Bush Sr., is already putting the word out that, of course, Newt is dead meat. He's roadkill. But putting the word out that Santorum ought to just, you know, pack up his Bibles and his holy water and his communion wafers and go home. You know, just leave it to a Bush family selection here. So if Sheila's right, then Jeb Bush for vice president on the Mitster ticket, because Mitt Romney right now, I don't think Mitt Romney on his own could win the job as, you know, a sewer inspector in any big city. Certainly in the South, and I doubt very many big cities in the North would, want anything to do with this guy. He's such a liar. Romney is a flat out liar and a greasy, weaselly liar at that. I mean, some liars you can respect. Like, some liars you can respect, but Republican liars are such grease heads, such grease balls, such slimy, slimy devils, you know, like the pig man. I mean, the guy just oozes some kind of, I don't know, grease. You know, he's such a liar. Anyway, where was I? A spokeswoman for the Misters confirmed that Bush and Romney will huddle privately in Houston tomorrow, and that Bush Palais is expected to make his endorsement of Romney at a joint event following the meeting. Now, apparently, according to the Associated Press, these two clowns have had a long personal friendship. And in December 2007, Romney delivered an address on his Mormon faith at the George Bush Presidential Library in the State College Station, Florida, Texas. So there you have it. You heard it here first. It's not mine. It's Sheila's. But you heard it here first that when this crazed Bush mother and father, who have unleashed a trio, or was it a quartet, of four of the most criminal sons since Ma Barker on the United States. They are going to, and you know, they're so upper class, too. I mean, it's just so upper class here. It's not like Ma Barker, who was just, you know, some hillbilly. Wasn't she? Wasn't she from the South? I think she was. I think she was from somewhere around here. Hey, go kill him. But George and Barbara, I mean, every single one of their sons has been involved in some kind of criminal activity. In the case, I think George W. takes the cake. You know, he's a war criminal. But the rest of them, which one was it that was involved in the savings and loan business? The only reason he didn't go to prison is because of his last name. Jeb had some kind of a scam going out of some kind of a... was it an I think he does, still does, an education scam. One of them had some kind of a medical fraud scam going someplace, like health cares. I don't know. This is a real criminal family. And it's understandable. I mean, none of them have the talent evolution gave a damn walnut. They're just screwballs. So Neil Bush, that's who was the bad one. Thanks, catfish. Neil Bush. SNL Neil. So anyway, you heard it here first, thanks to Sheila. Pat Robertson again, did you hear about this? Huh? He's never hidden the fact that he doesn't like anybody in the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender community, nobody. And he has, he spent so much time on his sloppy, crazed program, the 700 Club, disparaging various people that Pat finds not living up to his standards. And, of course, he speaks for God. You know, he'll talk to God right on your television if you know, every once in a while. Well, let me see. God's talking to me now. What? Yeah? Do what? Okay. God says, send me a lot of money. Anyway, Robertson recently said, I think he's reaching. I don't know what he's trying to do here. I don't know if he's trying to find favor with his demonic god or his own sickness, because, you know, he knows he's getting old. He's getting towards the end of his ability to not go plunging completely into evangelical senility and then death. So he's, I'm not sure what he's doing, but he made the statement that homosexuality is actually a type of demonic possession. Demonic a possession. Now, how this came about, it came during a segment of his crazed program where he was telling a story about a man who, according to Robertson, quote, trolled the streets for 7 years looking for cheap sex with other men while his wife was at home completely clueless. Must have been. Who is that evangelical guy that got caught? Pastor. No. what was his name? Oh, there's been so many of them. But anyway, in response to the story, Robertson said, the world today says, okay, so you're gay. You want to have affairs with men. That's cool. You have an absolute right to do that. Why not? That's not the right attitude. The attitude is that this is sin. It's wrong. And this man realized it was wrong, but couldn't control it. But that type of conduct is wrong. He's obsessed. He has a compulsion. It's related to demonic possession. My goodness. Demonic possession.
For change, I would not dump my complaints with all there is to share. So hey God, you can sit back, you can lay all your weary troubles on us, and God, we will not pray, not today. I say this is your day off, 'cause today it's gonna be a good day.
He's the voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
I don't care if it rains or freezes, long as I got my plastic Jesus riding on the dashboard on my car.
21 past the hour. By the way, this hour is being sponsored by Dave Richard, or is it Richard? I think it's Richard. He's sponsored before, I believe. He's the CPA. And his message, he writes, as a small family business owner, I'm proud to help support another true small family business, the Mike Malloy Show. My CPA firm is just my daughter, myself, and occasionally my sister. We need to keep Mike's voice on the air. Where else can you hear the truth about society mixed with just the right amount of compassion and venom? Heavy on the venom. By the way, if you are an individual or small business and want some pretty damn good tax planning advice, shoot me an email. You can send it to dave@daverichard. Just like it sounds. DaveRichardCPA.com. dave@daverichardcpa.com. Thanks, Dave. The whole idea behind Church Night, of course, is Wednesday night is prayer meeting night. It still is in here in the South. I don't know what it's like up north, but it's prayer meeting night. Mississippi is the most religious U.S. state, according to the Gallup poll, new poll out. One of the eight states where the Gallup poll classifies at least half of the residents as, quote, very religious, end quote. At the other end of the spectrum, Vermont and New Hampshire are the least religious states and are two of the five states. The other three are Maine, Massachusetts, and Alaska, where less than 30% of all residents say they are religious. How about that? So if you live in Maine, Massachusetts, Vermont, New Hampshire, or Alaska, you live in a place where there's no overwhelming religious nonsense to deal with. The Gallup poll classifies 40% of Americans nationwide as very religious, based on statements that religion is an important part of their daily life, and they attend religious services every week, blah, blah, blah. Another 32% of Americans are non-religious, based on the statement that religion is not an important part of their daily life. They seldom or ever attend religious. And the remaining 28% are moderately religious because they say religion is important, but they do not attend service regularly, and because they say religion is not important, but they still attend services. Now, religiosity varies widely across U.S. states and regions. Mississippi and the Deep South and Vermont and New England provide the most extreme examples of this disparity. 60% of Mississippians are very religion and 11% non-religious, while only 23% of Vermonters are religious and 58% are non-religious. And more generally, 8 of the 10 most religious states are in the tornado zone. Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana, Arkansas, South Carolina, Texas, North Carolina, and Georgia, along with Oklahoma, and one in the West, Utah. Well, that's because they're Mormons, right? None of the most religious states is in the Middle Atlantic, New England, or West Coast regions. Not one. I wonder why that is. I've never been able to figure that out. But anyway, a clear glance, it says here from the Gallup organization, it's clear from a glance at Gallup's State of the States map that the most religious states in the Union generally are the most Republican, while the least religion skew more toward the Democratic Party. This means that the most divided states are the ones where residents tend to be neither at the very religious nor at the non-religious end of the spectrum, blah, blah, blah. Now, what does that have to do, all those numbers? I hate that what I just did to you over the past 2 minutes, giving all those numbers in the polling, and this one is 28%, that was 32%, blah, 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 blah. But there's a reason for it, and the reason is in Tom Friedman's column in the New York Times today. He's talking about the state of politics in Australia and New Zealand, where it concerns right-wing, left-wing, you know, liberal or conservative. And what he found about Australia and New Zealand is truly interesting. He says it's a place in the world where moderate Republicans still exist. Unfortunately, you have to take a 13-hour flight from L.A. to get there. He adds, indeed, to go from America to Down Under is to experience both jet lag and a political shock. In New Zealand and Australia, you could fit their entire political spectrum from conservative to liberal inside the U.S. Democratic Party. Now, think about that for a second, because when we come back, there's a reason for it. And Friedman, I know it's Tom Friedman. I don't care. He's not writing about politics. He's writing about attitude. There's a reason that the political spectrum in Australia and New Zealand is so mild. There are a couple of reasons, but one of them stands out and has to do with church night. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
And watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Dave Richard. He's a CPA, and check out his firm. It's DaveRichardCPA.com. DaveRichardCPA.com. You can email him there, dave@daverichardcpa.com. He's our sponsor this hour. His message, he says, as a small family business owner, I'm proud to help support another true small family business, the Malloy Show. My CPA firm is just my daughter, myself, and occasionally my sister. We need to keep Mike's voice on the air. Where else can you hear the truth about society mixed with just the right amount of compassion and venom? By the way, Dave adds, if you are an individual or small business and want some pretty damn good tax planning advice, shoot me an email, dave@daverichardcpa.com. Thank you, Dave. Anyway, all right, Friedman, I don't like Friedman. I don't like his political point of view. He's an imperialist. He fights for the imperialist attitudes of the United States. He's also a warmonger, as long as he doesn't have to get involved in it. But I digress. He went to New Zealand, and he found out that politics in New Zealand, the so-called left and the right, the National Party, the Labour Party, National being the Republicans, Labour being the, comparable to the Democratic Party. And he points out that the entire spectrum of politics in New Zealand and Australia would, from conservative to liberal, would fit easily inside the U.S. Democratic Party. He quotes Paul Quinn, a parliamentarian from New Zealand's Conservative National Party. He once told a group of visiting American Fulbright scholars, quote, "I will explain to you how our system works compared to yours. You have Democrats and Republicans. My Labour opponents would be Democrats. I'm a member of the National Party, and we would be Democrats as well." End quote. Now, Friedman points out there is much debate here in this sewer, political sewer called the United States. A lot of debate over climate policy. It's not really debate. It's a bunch of right-wing religious freaks screaming about the fallibility of science while claiming the infallibility of their religious points of view. But compared to Australia, say Australia has a carbon tax, New Zealand has cap and trade. There's no serious debate in either country about climate science. In this country, it is political suicide for any Republican to take climate change seriously. And in Australia and New Zealand, it is political suicide for conservatives not to. Oh my God. You mean they're rational? He points out, an Australian environmentalist, Paul Gilding, says, in Australia and New Zealand, there are plenty of climate skeptics in politics, but they know it's a political loser to say so. Gilding goes on to say, this became the case after Australia suffered its worst ever drought lasting more than 10 years. And now there is strong public acceptance of the basic scientific conclusion that the climate is changing and humans are a significant contributor, end quote. How about health care? Conservatives in Australia and New Zealand have long accepted single-payer national health care systems. The Labour Party ruled New Zealand from 1999 to 2008. And when it was replaced by the Conservative National Party, it was then replaced by the Conservative National Party. During that period, when Labour was in charge, it passed legislation that legalized civil unions. They passed legislation giving prostitutes the same health and safety protections as other workers. They extended income subsidies for families with children. Now, while these moves were resisted by conservatives when they were the opposition party, when they took over, they didn't try to repeal or badmouth any of those positions. Because they know that the people of Australia and New Zealand are not half-witted, jerkwad, stupid religious freaks like we have here. And then this line from Friedman. There are many reasons for the narrowness of the political spectrum. Neither New Zealand nor Australia are strong church-going countries. So so-called social issues don't resonate as much. Neither Australia nor New Zealand are strong church-going countries. Isn't that amazing? So, once again, without the presence of fanatical religion like we have in this country, this evangelical Christianity that is sick and twisted, when there's a political sphere with the absence of that religious craziness, things get done. Things progressive. The conservatives are forced by the people, kicking and screaming, to accept science. But once they do accept it, they say, oh, well, okay, I guess you're right. In this country, listen to what these right-wing Christian freaks keep screaming. They're the ones who say, oh, we're put upon. Oh, we're being oppressed. Oh, we're being, we're losing our freedom. Obama is trying to kill us all. If this is not paranoid schizophrenia, they're schizophrenic because they hear voices and they see things fluttering in the air. You know, when you talk to God, it's prayer. When God talks to you, it's schizophrenia. So we've got paranoid schizophrenics who are determining the social contract in this country. Five of them are on the Supreme Court. Can you imagine Fat Tony Scalia and Sammy the Fish Alito and the silent one over there, Uncle Clarence? You know, these guys sit around. And these are the ones going to determine whether or not something as totally non-radical as the Affordable Care Act, whether or not it's constitutional. And watch out, because, you know, the most important Christian holidays coming up. So I would imagine that Fat Tony and Sammy the Fish and Kennedy and the guy over in the corner, Uncle Clarence, and who's the other one? John Roberts. You know, these guys are going to get all whipped into a frenzy. Watch them show up for court. You know, on Good Friday with the Ash thing, or no, was that already happened? That already happened, didn't it? Yeah, Ash Wednesday, that happened. what do I know? Watch him show up at court with, I don't know, what is it? You have Good Friday. Why do they call it Good Friday? What's the good part? Isn't that where they just beat and flayed the living daylights out of their Messiah? It was good for the Romans. Is that why they call it Good Friday? But I'll explain a little bit later in the program why I think these six Catholics on the Supreme Court are going to utterly destroy Obama's and the Democratic Party's attempt to try to improve to some degree certain aspects of the miserable state of health insurance in this country. The Affordable Care Act is not what we need in this country. We need single payer. We need the same things civilized nations have, like Canada. Well, they have a different thing, but it's similar. But like New Zealand, like Australia, like the French, like the Germans, like the Brits, like most civilized countries. Cuba, you know, where this madness of people standing out in front of the Supreme Court, frothing at the mouth and clutching their bodies and jerking and twitching with all kinds of pseudo-religious garbage up on their placards and their signs and draped around their bodies about Obama the communist and keep your hands off my medical care, government, and this crazy, crazy... Am I yelling again? I sure am. I'm sorry for that. If you don't like it, switch channels. This crazy nonsense. The religious nonsense. All right, we have a break. And we shall come back after the break. I'm just about finished with church night. We're going to move on to... there's one more thing about Australia and New Zealand's political system, though, that I want to share with you when we come back. And they're such beautiful countries. I mean, well, Australia's okay, I guess. But New Zealand, you know, just beautiful. Of course, there's only 4 million people there. 20 million sheep. We'll be right back. For the hour. This hour has been sponsored by CPA Dave Richard. Thanks, Dave. He writes, as a small family business owner, I'm proud to help support another small family business, the Malloy Show. He goes on, we need to keep Mike's voice on the air. Where else can you hear the truth about society mixed with just the right amount of compassion and venom? By the way, if you're an individual or small business and want some pretty damn good tax planning advice, shoot me an email at dave@daverichardcpa.com. dave@daverichardcpa.com. Check him out. This is a small business. This is what we look for to help support the program. Thanks, Dave. Tom Friedman in Christchurch, New Zealand, writing about the difference in the political system here and the political system there. And then there is, this, Malcolm Turnbull, who is the leader of Australia's or he was the leader of Australia's main conservative party. Turnbull says, quote, we also have compulsory voting here. You get fined if you don't vote. In a system like yours in the States, there is always the temptation to run hard on hot button issues that will fire up the base and get them out to vote. In a compulsory voting system, your base has to vote, as does everyone else. And so the goal is to target the middle ground. End quote. Compulsory voting. Friedman concludes by saying, look at America from here. It makes me feel as though we have the worst of all political worlds right now. The days when there were liberal Republicans and conservative Democrats are over. We don't have compulsory voting. Special interest money is out of control. We lack any credible third party that could capture enough of the center to force both the Democrats and Republicans to compete for votes there. So we've lost our ability to do big things together. Yet everything we have to do, tax reform, fiscal reform, healthcare reform, energy policy, every one of those things is a big thing and can only be done together. And another politician from New Zealand said, a lot of us who love your country do not see where change can come. In America these days, we see all the barriers you have now to structural and fundamental change. It feels like you've lost your ability to adapt. Yeah, well, that is very true. And the main reason that, in my opinion, that has happened, the Republican Party now is, while it's a wholly owned subsidiary of corporate America, it's being managed by the religious crazy people in this country, the evangelical Christians. And they don't give a damn. They couldn't care less about what happens because they live in this foggy world of the life hereafter. You know, these people are just waiting. Oh, it's coming. It's coming. It really is coming. Next week. All right. Next month. Okay. Next year. You know, this rapture crap, all this nonsense that they believe in. So why worry about roads and bridges? If you're on a bridge that collapses and your family dies, they went to heaven. If you were saved, of course, if you were Jew or Muslim or I don't know, a liberal or gay or whatever, no, you're burning in hell. So, they don't care. And when you have a major political party that has been captured, this is just like the Islamic fundamentalists who do the same damn thing to their people. And the Jewish fundamentalists in Israel do the same damn thing to their people. They don't care. They don't give a tinker's damn about what happens in the only existence that there really is.
Oh, how do you know, Mike?
Well, let me put it this way. I'm betting my life on it. How's that? Jerks. So that's one of the reasons that nothing is going to change in this country until such time as people realize the horrible, detrimental, corrosive, destructive force that is evangelical Christianity in this country. Why don't you Christians go back in the closet where you belong? Your Messiah tells you to go in there. He does. He tells you, you want to talk to my Father? Go in your closet and pray. Pray to yourself. Public prayer is an abomination. Why don't you listen to your own Messiah? I mean, that's the part I don't get. Why don't you listen to him when he says, feed the hungry, take care of the sick? Well, what do you think that means, take care of the sick? Visit people in prison. Clothe the naked. What do you think that stuff means? Do you think Jesus got drunk and he just walked around going, hey, I'll tell you, well, let's clothe the naked. Ah, look at all the naked people. Is that what you think that means? What does it mean? Does it mean standing in front of the Supreme Court with your Bibles and your tracts and your depictions of Obama as a monkey or a communist or a Nazi or whatever? Is that what it means to you? To stand there and listen to your these speakers who tell you that Obama's trying to take over your health care? Where's your Messiah in all this? Where is your religious upbringing? Where is that stuff you learned in Sunday school? Huh? Where is it? I'll tell you where it is. You're a bunch of goddamn hypocrites. That's where it is. You don't believe any of that. You don't believe any of it. You're liars. You're hypocrites. And you're brain dead. Not to mention soul dead. So that's the answer to that. But as far as our friends in New Zealand, Australia, wondering if there's ever going to be an awakening in this country, let me tell you something, folks down under. The answer to that is very simple. As long as there's religion in this country, no. We'll be right back. Stick around. We have miles to go before we sleep. We're finished with church night. I'm Mike Malloy. Think of this. Being sponsored by Marla Taylor in Peterborough, Canada. She writes, hi, Mike. Though it's only an hour from me, I sponsor with love in my heart for all you do for all of us. We simply can't lose you. From Marla in Peterborough, Canada. By hour, I guess you mean to the border, right? Thanks, Marla. Kind words. Thank you. If you have seen the video now, obtained by, I think, Matt Gutman of ABC News, it was played on ABC News tonight, police video of Zimmerman, the guy who murdered the teenager in Florida. And all of a sudden, everything the right-wingers have been telling you, all the filth and the poison and the lies and this freak, a drudge, and all the people who suck his news site, so-called, to get every bit of filth and garbage they can get out of it, All of it is just about to go up in smoke. There's a video of Zimmerman being when he was brought in by the police after he murdered this teenager. And remember what Zimmerman's been saying, you know, that he had to murder the teenager because his life was in danger and his head was being pounded on the ground. He had a bloody nose. And, well, as you look at the video, if you haven't seen it yet, I'm sure you probably have, there's not a mark on this bastard. There's no blood. There's no scrapes. There's no scratches. There's no nothing. Nothing. And if you look at the video, the cops are talking to him and looking at him and there's no there. This attempt by these filthy pig right-wingers in this country that is just relentless from Crazy Eyes, what's her name, that right-winger woman. Oh, no, she's got a talk show or something. She's got the crazy eyes. What's her name? From you know, the third tier talk show hosts up to these half-witted bloggers, all the way up the food chain to the enormous bloated pig man himself, Rush Limbaugh. Every single one of these people who, as I've said before, they want race war. They want it more than they want their damn rapture. Michelle Malkin. What's her first name? Is it Michelle Malkin? Yeah, Crazy Eyes. It's my understanding of her website. She's put up just all kinds of nasty. These people are sick. These are sick bastards. These right wingers are just poison. Absolute poison. Here's this dead kid shot in cold blood. And all the lies that are being told by Zimmerman. He knows what he did. And that picture of him looking like a little fat ass. No, he's not. Look at this police video from when he was brought in. This guy is well built. He's muscular. That arrest picture that was taken several years ago, he has that mugshot. That's not Zimmerman now. But from thinkprogress.org, this is from a couple of days ago, and Jed Legum, writing at Think Progress, over the last 40 hours, there's been a sustained effort to smear Trayvon Martin, the 17-year-old who was shot dead by George Zimmerman. And the teenager's mother, Sabrina Fulton, said, "They killed my son, now they're trying to kill his reputation." Thus far, as Judd writes, these attacks have fallen into two categories, false and irrelevant. Much of the leaked information seems intended to play into stereotypes about young African-American males. Here's what everyone should know. One, prominent conservative websites published fake photos, of course, of Trayvon Martin. Twitchy, a new website run by prominent conservative blogger Michelle Malkin, promoted a photo that shows Martin in saggy pants and flipping the bird. The photo, which spread quickly on conservative websites and Twitters, intended to paint Martin as a thug. As Twitchy later acknowledged, it is not a photo of Trayvon Martin. Now, all you filthy, dung-eating right-wing blog sites, are you going to acknowledge the fact that it is not Trayvon Martin? No, you won't. Because you're poisonous little bastards that have no function on earth except to try to stir things up. If all of you were to die tomorrow, the only people who would miss you might be your mothers, and that I'm not so sure of. Number two, the Sanford police selectively leaked irrelevant negative information about Trayvon Martin. The authorities told the Orlando Sentinel that Trayvon was suspended from school for 10 days, quote, after being found with an empty marijuana baggie, end quote. It's unclear what the relevance of that leak was, other than to smear the kid. On Fox News, poor, drug-addled Geraldo Rivera said that Martin was dressed, quote, like a wannabe gangster. He had a hoodie on. Bill O'Reilly, another piece of human waste, agreed with him. The evidence? Martin was wearing a hoodie. Geraldo added that, quote, everyone that ever stuck up a convenience store, that's his words, was wearing a hoodie. Dear God. Without any evidence, right-wing bloggers suggest that Martin was a drug dealer. Right-wing, half-witted, scum-sucking blogger Dan Riel advances the story. Oh, yeah, Real World View advances the story that Martin was wearing a hoodie. He also pushes a widely linked piece on the site called Waggist. I don't know what that's about. Just another one of these fifth-rate right-wing punks that figured out how to turn a computer on and off and how to type. Without any evidence, another right-wing blogger alleged that Martin assaulted a bus driver. Unlike Zimmerman, Trayvon Martin has no documented history of violence. This allegation continues to be advanced by a blogger on The Examiner, even after the real reason was leaked to the police and confirmed by the family. And what else? The final part of the effort to smear Trayvon Martin is to link him and his supporters to groups like the New Black Panthers and people like Louis Farrakhan. Oh, my God. And now it turns out that these right-wing slime are going to be caught with their pants up around their eyeballs. The video is running over and over again on Lawrence O'Donnell's program right now on MSNBC. If you want to turn it on, you take a look. You tell me. Does that look like somebody who was just viciously attacked? There's not a mark on him. Nothing. He's got his little jacket on and his little gray T-shirt, and he's standing there. And the other thing, what Lawrence O'Donnell is suggesting, that the police in Sanford, Florida, have had enough of this, and they're the ones that made this video available. Gutman, the reporter for ABC, said all he did was call the police department and say, hey, do you have the video of the when you brought him in for questioning? Yeah, we've got it. You want it? Yeah! It was that simple. No FOIA, no big deal. Gutman says that the Sanford police, they're very much cooperating. And I think it's because they've had enough of this. They've had enough of it. They know damn good and well what Zimmerman did. This son of a bitch is a murderer. At least guilty of manslaughter. But every single filthy right-winger in America that has access to a 10-cent radio show Or a computer, every one of these swine who are desperate for a race war. Why don't you people step out from behind your little hidey holes and see what it's like to face somebody in the real world? But it's so typical of right-wingers. It's so typical. Jeez. 41 shots. Cut through the night. You're kneeling.
Go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
I live upstairs from you. Yes, I think you've seen it.
21 past the hour. Where did this come from? I think from Democratic Underground, Limbaugh is saying he's being picked on or people that support him. What does it say here? This is too rich to be believed. For two decades, Limbaugh has waged a war of social terrorism against the poor, the lower class, and minorities, etc. And now that he's finally getting his comeuppance, he wants to Cry et tu, Brute, whatever that means. Cry me a river rush and drown in it. That's what it says here. And then some answers to this. I can't stop laughing. Really? Boycotts, harshly worded emails, and public criticism are now terrorist acts? Right. Isn't it funny when the shoe's on the other foot, huh? They're talking about this company, MSCO, that has come to Russia's defense, apparently. I don't know anything about them, but their client list includes Remax, Wolfgang Puck, Struts, Zummer Homes, Monster Savings, Cosmolite, Own America, Chartist, Carbonka. What the hell? That sounds like, I don't know. It sounds like, I don't know what it sounds like. It sounds like made up words. MSCO. So it's okay for the pig man to insult and attack a woman on his filthy program, you know, the Limbaugh sewer, but as soon as there is a organized boycott against his advertisers, oh no, terrorism. Oh, by the way, the phones are open here, 877-996-2556, if you want to join in. Mark is in San Francisco. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Pretty good. You know, a lot of what's going on here in this young man being killed is the fact that it's a diversion from the fact that Alec, a rotten law, and Jeb Bush, a rotten individual, are responsible for an increase in deaths due to this law. And they bear the responsibility of this young man being killed. A lot of it is on them.
I think so.
You know, and part of this is just a diversion. Just like they did with Sandra Fluke, they go to a person and they demonize them. You know, if it goes against the GOP's agenda of whatever they're trying to, you know, destroy or who they're trying to destroy or what policy they want to destroy, they go to a human being and they demonize them even if they're dead. That's how far these guys go. They're nuts.
Yeah, well, what they want, they want a race war. They want blood in the streets. They want people shooting and killing each other. These are sick sons of bitches. I mean, I've had my go-arounds with the right wing in this country. Every single one of them that emails me is a filthy little coward. Because, you know, they come up with their threats. And I used to say many times when I used to respond to this stuff, now I have an algorithm email that just goes up, and when certain words or phrases are used, they get a form letter. But I used to say many times back in the day, if you want to get ass, you got to bring ass, you know. And these punks, these right wing punks, who you know, stir people up with their blogs and their online columns and their cheesy radio programs. There's only one thing they want, Mark, and you know as well as I do. They want to see other people killing each other, so that they can make their snide, half-witted, cowardly comments about it. Every single one of these right wingers is a filthy, flat-out coward. You know it. I know it. And you know what? They know it.
They do. And you know, Mike, the sad part about it is, even worse, is we have this religious community in this country that goes along with this hate speech, this agenda of the Republican Party to steal from the middle class and the poor, transfer it to the rich. If you look at Ryan's plan,
mm-hmm.
You know, that's about as Christian as, you know, the devil.
right.
You know, and I mean, this is right. You can't really take any of these religious institutions seriously when they are following the agenda of the devil.
That's,
I mean,
true.
I'm a Catholic, Mike, and I can't get my head around the Catholic Church that goes along with the GOP or any religion that goes along with the GOP. To me, that goes against everything that I've learned about Jesus Christ.
Well, it certainly, you know, you don't even have to be a member of any kind of Christian denomination. All you have to do is sit down and spend some time reading what the Christians claim as their Bible, the New Testament. And if you read it, the few instances where their Messiah actually said something, you will see that these Christians today are doing exactly the opposite of what they were instructed to do. I mean, if they really believed that Jesus was the Son of God and part of the Trinity, part of the Godhead, in other words, a God himself, if they believe that, and they are diametrically, are they doing diametrically the opposite of what he told them to do, what they're doing is setting themselves up for an eternity in the hell that they invented. That's the part that drives me insane, Mark. I just wish they'd sit down and shut up, because they don't believe their religion. Mark, I got to leave it there. Thanks, pal. Stay in touch. I appreciate it, Mark. They don't believe anything they say. It's hypocritical. Just slime. We'll be right back.
Get your news unfiltered with Mike Malloy.
Standing up on the stars and stripes. 25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Marla Taylor in Peterborough, Canada. Thanks, Marla. She writes, though it's only an hour from me, I sponsor with the love of my heart for all that you do for all of us. We simply can't lose you. Marla in Peterborough, Canada. Thanks, Marla. Very kind. Thanks for sponsoring the program. Michael in Roswell. Of interest, too, is that Zimmerman was arrested around 2005 on charges of domestic violence, resisting an officer without violence, and resisting an officer with violence. All those charges were dropped before trial because Zimmerman entered a pretrial diversion program. Presumably, he entered counseling in lieu of trial. Now, the question is not so much that Zimmerman had prior charges, but that he was not only able to get a handgun permit, but a concealed carry permit as well, given that arrest record. That's an indication of a badly broken system, and we know who broke it. The NRA, the right-wingers in the Florida legislature, and, of course, ALEC. Which is why I wish that Obama had had the good sense not to say that Martin looked like a son of his would, but rather he was initiating an investigation into the NRA's lobbying and funding practices and ALEC's ability to evade lobbying laws. None of this gets solved without putting the fear of God into the people and organizations responsible. Michael and Roswell. Yeah, me too. It's one thing to, me too, I feel the same way, Michael. It's one thing to show some human compassion, as Obama did, for this murdered teenager. But it's something else, again, to do nothing about it. And why is there not? I mean, why didn't Obama make that statement? Well, because he's Obama, that's why. Because he's Obama. That's why. Lawrence is in Lansing, Michigan. Hey, Lawrence.
How you doing, Mike? I'm glad to talk to you. I listen to you quite regularly now. And, Mike, I'm going to tell you this. I am glad that you've given a lot of us a venue to speak and to voice our opinions. But I must say this, Mike. I am a Democrat. Well, at least I was. I'm an independent now.
Yeah.
I have lost my faith in the Democratic Party.
Now, I hear that. I'm right with you, Lawrence.
And the thing about it is, when we moved we're originally from Flint, my family and I. We are UAW General Motors people. So they have been transferring us around. We did over a decade in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. We did about 2 years in Kansas, and now we're back here in Michigan. And this is our home. But let me get to the point. When we talk about Obama, I have no use for him, because when we came to Lansing, I got out here with my family and my teenage kids, knocked on doors for this man, asked people to come out and vote for him.
Right.
And I have been sorely disappointed in him and the whole Democratic, you know, Congress and all of them, you know,
sure.
They ain't worth nothing. They are truly worthless because they are really no better. No, they are slightly better than the Republicans, but not by much.
Well, that's the thing. The Democratic Party, when the Democrats won the House right at the end of Bush's second term, and Nancy Pelosi and all the Democratic power people in the House made it very clear that they were not going to do anything about the previous 6-7 years of criminal activity by these Republicans. And then when Obama got elected, and he made the same statement, "No, we're going to look forward, but we're not going to look back." I mean, that would be like at the end of World War II, when the Nuremberg war trials, if people would have said, "No, we're not going to look back on the atrocities that the Nazis did. We're going to look forward. We're just going to let that go." Bush and Cheney and the rest of these people committed mass murder. They went into somebody else's country and destroyed people, blew them into chunks of bone and red mist, killed men, women, and children, civilians. I mean, they committed the worst crime imaginable. And every single leading Democrat in the House and the Senate and the president turned their back and said, "No, let's look forward." I'm sorry.
That's what I'm talking about. You hit exactly. The nail on the head.
Exactly. I mean, how do you have respect? How do you have respect for somebody who can look these atrocities in the face and turn the other way? I don't care if it's Nancy Pelosi or Harry Reid or Barack Obama or the head of the Democratic National Committee. I don't care. How can you look this stuff in the face and then just turn around and go about business? No.
And you know what? What the sad thing about all of this is, everybody on the left knows what you're saying is the truth and it's gospel. But here is the thing that pisses me off and makes me say, to hell with all of this. I'm going to be an independent. I'm going to vote for the best person for the job. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be constrained by no party. No more of that craziness, because Clinton was bought and paid for by billionaires. Obama is bought and paid for by billionaires. Bush is bought and paid for by billionaires. And the average working person still runs around here and don't understand that the name of the game is people who have all the money and all the power dictates the morals and the values of a country. They tell everybody what to do. The politicians are paid and bought, and they do what they are told to do. And they're not told to do what's right by us, the citizenry. No, we don't count. And that gets right to the heart of why I really wanted to say something on your show. You see, Mike, this Trayvon Martin case, it hits hard to home. Here in Lansing, Michigan, my wife is the chair of Civil and Human Rights at Local 602. That's a UAW plant here in Michigan, Delta Township plant. She represents over 3,400 people. She was elected. Do you know that the East Lansing police in 2010 were looking for three black men in a Lesabre? They pulled my wife, my 16-year-old daughter, and my 17-year-old son over, put them in the middle of the road, pointed shotguns and pistols at their head, handcuffed them. Mm. And you know the sad thing about all of this? They were looking for three black men in a Lesabre. My wife is driving a brand-new Buick Lucerne. Mm. But that didn't matter to the police. They told my son, "We were looking for three blacks in a Buick. Y'all happen to be the first blacks we've seen." Mm. And I say all of this to say this. When my wife went to the UAW, went to all the NAACP and all these agencies, they blew her off. They took me, because I have a background that permits me to go into a police station and read them the riot act. I turned down being cop 4 times. I have a background in personal protection security, commercial security. I know police procedure. And the bottom line of this is, I'm going to flip the script. Last year in March, Lansing PD killed a 17-year-old girl in a Bank of America. She had busted Wonder Woman, went in there late at night. She was high.
Hmm.
17 years old, 2 Lansing police. One got one arm, one got the other arm. The K-9 unit, he say, "Nice." Shoots the girl in the head with a 40-round caliber in her head and a 40-round caliber in her stomach. Now, mind you, 17 years old, maybe about 100 pounds, 110 pounds. Him and another officer got one arm apiece. If you got one arm and another cop got the other arm, where's the third arm that got the knife?
Mm-hmm.
The cop got off on it. To bring you back to the point that I was telling you, when the police pulled guns on my family, I took it to the state attorney general's office, and this is the sad thing about it. Everything that I'm listening in the Trayvon Martin case, My family was a hair's breadth away from being taken out on the street by cowboy overzealous cops who racial profiled them. And you want to know the sad thing about it? The Trayvon Martin case hits home because the state attorney general's office is there to protect the police. It's not there to protect the citizenry. I didn't know that at the time. But by me getting involved, advocating for my wife and kids, dealing with the FBI, dealing with the state police, dealing with the Michigan Department of Civil Rights, I had to fight the Michigan Department of Civil Rights to get them to do their job. And we ended up settling out of court. They gave the wife a formal apology, a written apology, and a small monetary settlement. But here's the point. They did not want to do none of that until I went to the police station, gave them a martial arts demonstration, let them know that they can check my background. I am a martial artist for 40 years. I am a gun collector for over 30 years. And I let them know, I believe in the rule of law. But if you kill my family, then you're going to have to deal with me the same way you dealt with my family. And if you want to be a barbarian, then that's where we got to go. Once the police understood that they were messing with somebody that was willing to lay his life down for his family, they had a come to Jesus moment. My family was just minding their own business. And this is the point that I want to get to, to all the listeners, especially the minorities. You're sitting down crying, asking the law to work. If you're not willing to stand up for your own personal rights, if you're not willing to lay your life down for your children, you will get no respect from the bullies who have badges and guns. If they got this stand your ground law, then go out and buy a damn gun, learn how to use it, and stand your ground. Instead of you sitting back always crying, asking for somebody to come stand up and fight for you, stand on your own 2 feet and fight. Because when I was in the police department, kicking them in their butt, the state attorney general's office, I didn't have a crowd with me. It was one black man who knew what he was talking about and was talking the talk and walking the walk. And I got my respect. Now they do not mess with my family. They see me, they turn their car and go the other way. They do not pull up beside me because my policy is this. And I just had this conversation with them again. If you run up on me and I'm minding my own business and not doing nothing, and you reach and pull your gun, I'm pulling mine. I know how to drop rolls and put three in the groin. This is what I want to explain to the police.
I hear you. Lawrence, listen, powerful phone call, man. I hear what you're saying. I hear your words, and I hear what's behind them, and I have to break now. I'm glad you called. I thank you very much. I hope you call again. All right? Take care, Lawrence.
Radiation underground in the sky. Animals and birds who live nearby are the night. Oh, mercy, all things and what they
before the hour. This hour is sponsored by Marla in Peterborough, Canada. Her message: Hi, Mike. Though it's only an hour for me, I sponsor with love in my heart for all you do for all of us. We simply can't lose you. Marla in Peterborough, Canada. Thanks, Marla. Regarding Lawrence from Lansing, Michigan, the guy that called in just right before the break, I listen to that kind of emotion. And I know that, you know, here's an American male, just like I'm an American male. And when I think about my wife, my daughter, and maybe my son, my adult son, riding around someplace and having police pull him over because three white people committed a robbery someplace, I can't process that. I can't even pretend like I understand that. There's no way. Now, I mentioned before, I think last week or a week and a half ago, when the Trayvon Martin story started to get the attention of the nation, I said that for 14 years until he died, my best friend was a guy named Steve Smith here in Atlanta, stand-up comic, happened to be a black guy, and the conversations that we had You know, I was brought up in a whole integrated situation. I mean, from the earliest years all the way up through high school, I played football on a team where half of us were white, half of us were black. You know, integration, schmintegration. There was interracial dating in my school. It just wasn't an issue. There was also an awful lot of nastiness on the part of white people, too. I mean, don't get me wrong. There was a lot of surface stuff that looked like, oh, we're all in this together. But underneath it, there was still the racism. But years later, as an adult male, and Steve was an adult male, and he was married and had kids. I was married and had kids. And we used to spend a lot of time talking together. I was working in, he was in the entertainment industry, then a stand-up comic. I was in it too. Not as a comic, but as a writer and producer and so on and so forth. And some of the conversations that we had were just stunning to me, to sit there and listen to another black, to a black man, another man who happened to be black, telling me what his father told him when he was a kid growing up. What every black man has to tell his son, and now his daughters too. What has to be said to these kids as they're growing up. And I, you know, I used to sit there, and my son Chris, who's now in his 30s at the time, was, you know, like 5, 6, 7, 8 years old. And I used to listen to Steve talking about his young son, Justin, about what Steve was going to have to tell his boy. And I'm sitting there thinking, you know, what if I had to tell Chris that? But because Chris is white and I'm white, Steve was black and Justin was black, Justin had to hear stuff that my son Chris didn't have to hear. And I'm, you know, very few Caucasians get that. Very few whites understand the horrific burden that's put on black parents when they have a son or a daughter. And what Lawrence in Michigan was just talking about, that is the classic example. The classic example. And Caucasians are stuck with a lot of racism. Me too. I mean, you know, I wasn't brought up on the moon. I was brought up in the United States of America. I was brought up in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. And at very bottom, I'm just as much of a racist as any other white person in America. You can't escape it. The only thing you can do is overcome it. The only thing you can do is fight it every single damn day. And any Caucasian who said, well, you know, I like black people. I don't, you know, I'm not that. You better get real. You better get real. You better claim your racism. You cannot be brought up in this society if you're Caucasian. You cannot be brought up in this society without being exposed to racism on a level that gets inside your head and starts doing that thing inside your head about them. And the only thing that white folks can ever hope to do is to fight that. And it's a daily damn struggle. I was lucky. I had a guide. I had Steve. You know, I was in my 40s at the time, and I thought, oh, man, you know, I'm pretty hip. I'm pretty liberal. I'm pretty cool. I don't have any problem with black folk. The hell I didn't. It was in there. And Steve helped me understand and confront it. That was the thing. That was the thing. To confront it and say, come on, Malloy. Come on. If you want to get real, let's get real. If you want to have a 40% friendship, we can do that. If you want to have a 60% friendship, we can do that. If you want to have 100% friendship between this black man and this white man, let's begin the dialogue. And I'm telling you, you know, every time I think about Steve, it just kills me that he's dead. That he died very young. I've said before, he was a Vietnam-era veteran. He was in the Air Force. He was a stand-up comic, a decent man. So I would just suggest to my white brothers and sisters that if you really want to understand what's going on, you better find somebody who will have the patience to sit down and invite you to take that journey. You know, I mean, that's your call. But I'm telling you, you think that you are without racist attitudes. You think that you are free of that crap. Man, I'm not like that. I'm not like these Kluxers. You know, I'm for equality. Listen to me. Okay? You listen to this program because, for whatever reason. But listen to me. Just listen to me. If you really want to deal with it, and it takes some courage, I'm telling you. If you're Caucasian, it takes some courage. It does take some courage. But if you really want to deal with it, if you really, you get on some kind of an intimate level with a black friend and start your journey. And when you come out the other side, you're going to understand what racism is, and you're going to understand your part in it, just like I understood my part in it. I mean, or don't. I'm not preaching. I am not preaching. I'm just saying. We'll be back after break. I'm Mike Malloy. Probably where you are, too. Time has a funny way of doing that. I guess in certain parts of India, it's not 7 past any particular hour. One of the items that I couldn't really get into Monday or Tuesday because of being in D.C. for the Families USA convocation. And, you know, in interviews, the things that we did there for 2 days. And by the way, Families USA, again, is the national nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that is their primary goal, if not their only goal, is to obtain high-quality, affordable health care for all Americans. And they've been trying to do this for the past 25 years. You can go to their website, FamiliesUSA.com, I think. Is it FamiliesUSA.com? I think that's what it is. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's FamiliesUSA.com. .org. There you go. FamiliesUSA.org. You might want to check them out. But one of the stories that we didn't have a chance to comment on is the Dick Cheney heart transplant story. That just kind of creeped me out. I think I found out about it Sunday shortly after the plane landed in D.C. And I flipped on the television when I got near a television and saw this, you know, that the day before Saturday, apparently Saturday evening, Saturday afternoon, he had a heart transplant at the Inova Fairfax Hospital in Falls Church, Virginia, which is not very far from, obviously, it's a suburb of D.C., more or less. But there were rumors circulating around D.C. about this whole Dick Cheney heart transplant thing. There are about 3,100 Americans, apparently, currently on the national waiting list for a heart. About 2,300 of these operations, it says here, were performed last year. About 330 people died while waiting for a heart transplant. The majority of transplants occur in people who are 50 to 64 years old, The odds of survival are good. More than 70% of heart transplant recipients live at least 5 years. The survival rate or length is a bit lower for people over age 65. Cheney is 71. And there was a debate, as you can imagine, about whether or not he jumped the line. I know that is not true, and I'll tell you why in a minute. But one cardiologist, shortly after Cheney's surgery was disclosed, one cardiologist, Dr. Eric Topol of Scripps Health in La Jolla, California, said, or raised the issue of whether someone Cheney's age should have received a new heart. He said, quote, "The ethicist will get into this case," end quote. He tweeted that. But another cardiologist, Dr. William Zogby of Methodist Hospital's DeBakey Heart and Vascular Center in Houston, said, "I don't see any ethical issue here because a transplant is clearly indicated for someone whose heart is as weak as Cheney's was." Matter of fact, Zogby said Cheney might even have a better chance than younger people whose immune systems more actively fight new organs, which raises a concern about rejection. There'd be less rejection in Cheney. Oh God, I don't believe I'm talking about this. In Cheney's chest than there would be perhaps in someone younger whose immune system was not as quiet as Cheney's because of his age. But the rumor circulating through D.C. that I heard was that Cheney and his daughter Liz showed up at the transplant center in Virginia with one of those little portable coolers, those little red and white picnic coolers. You've seen them. And this cooler was leaking a red liquid as they walked across the parking lot at this transplant center. And they're leaving a trail of pale pink watery liquid behind them. And they walked through the door of the transplant center, and some guard or somebody said, "Mr. Vice President," and Liz said they were there for the operation. And so security brought the lead surgeon, the transplant surgeon, into the waiting room where Dick and Liz were sitting, and the surgeon tried to explain to Dick that he was still down the list, and Liz piped up and said, "Not anymore. We brought our own." Hence the leaky little icy cooler. Now, you can be a smartass or a cynic and say, "Oh, yeah, well, they probably just grabbed somebody and dragged them off behind a building and killed them and cut their heart out." No, I don't think so, although that is a clear possibility. Cheney is responsible for an awful lot of dead people. However, Cheney is the type who will order the deaths of tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people without batting an eye. A good example is his ordering the invasion and destruction of Iraq. Hundreds of thousands of people butchered. But would Dick Cheney be the type to take an individual and throttle him and drag him behind a building and he and Liz bend down with surgical equipment to cut the man's heart out? I don't think so. I don't think Dick Cheney would actually... I don't think she would either. I really don't. So I kind of discount the rumors that Dick and Liz Cheney snatched somebody off the streets somewhere, dragged them into the bushes, throttled them, and then immediately cut their heart out and dumped it into this little red and white cooler. The rumor was they had a lot of dry ice in there. First they wrapped it up in cheesecloth and then dropped it into this cooler. And rushed down to the Inova Fairfax Hospital in Falls Church, Virginia, and walked in with this thing. I don't think that's true. I'm just going to have to come down on the side of, no, That's just a scurrilous rumor. And the reason I say is because Dick Cheney is a coward. Now, I don't know about his daughter, Liz. She may be able to do something like that. Although I don't think she would cut the heart out. She might bite it out, but I don't know that she would cut it out. But Dick Cheney is a coward. He only orders the deaths of tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people from the privacy, as they say, of his quarters when where did the vice presidents live? National Naval Observatory or something, in an underground bunker. Remember all those times that Cheney would just disappear? He'd be in an undisclosed location? That's when he would be formulating new plans, apparently, to order the bombing and murder and killing and destruction and blasting and ripping to pieces tens, if not hundreds of thousands of men, women, and children at various places around the planet. But to actually come down to it where he would snatch a person off the street and cut their heart out? No, I just can't see, Dick Cheney doing that. So I'm going to have to give that one a double thumbs down and just say it's another one of those dirty, scurrilous rumors out there on the street. Probably started by somebody like, Newt Gingrich maybe? Or Santorum? You know, Santorum doesn't like the Cheneys because, you know, one of their daughters is gay. Oh, this is just crazy stuff. Apparently, the news out of Washington regarding the arguments going on in front of the Supreme Court is not good if you are in favor of the Affordable Care Act. Good if you are a right-wing half-wit who is one of these people, and God, did we see a lot of them over a three-day period. One of these people who are getting Medicare or some form of Social Security and carry their signs around telling the government to keep its hands off of their health care. You know, I mean, the degree of idiocy that I experienced in D.C. in these demonstrations, as I mentioned, Pterodactyl from RepublicanDirtyTricks.com and Bob Kincaid, head on Radio Network, and Bob's son, Ferg, at various times, and we would wander, a couple of us, or all four of us, wander into these crowds. You know, we would ditch our press credentials and wander into these crowds. And I can't describe it. I normally try to stay away from masses of people who I know are insane. There is nothing to be gained by wading into that. But I think I was seriously looking for a fight. I was just very pissed off by Tuesday afternoon, right before my plane was to leave to come back, and just wandered into a couple of these crowds. And the dynamic of the crowd is it's more, it's less dynamic, more static. It's just people standing there carrying, holding their signs, applauding when the speaker, and they had lots of right-wing religious speakers who were saying some of the most ridiculously untrue statements. You know, Fox News talking points, Republican talking points, Christian evangelical right-wing crazed talking points. And the bobbleheads would just applaud, and then they would stand quietly. And then applaud, and then they would stand quietly. And then applaud. I mean, it's just hundreds of them. We walked into one huge demonstration several hundred yards from the front of the Supreme Court, away from the picketers and the paraders, where there was a stage set up in one of the parks there near the Supreme Court. And there was a stage set up, and it was draped in the red, white, and blue bunting, and, you know, very patriotic and so to speak. And they had a video screen set up so the folks in back, the bobbleheads in back, could see what was going on the stage. And just to stand inside that kind of a envelope of people who are tremendously unaware of anything about what is happening, not just in Washington, but anywhere outside their own little narrow boundaries of their lives, whether those boundaries are defined by some kind of crazed Christianity or defined by some kind of crazed political right-wingery, nuttery. But they can't think outside that box that they have. Their parents put them in, their religious leaders put them in, their politicians put them in, their spouses put them in. I can only imagine. Now, the thing about it, there are very, very few young people, except the ones who were forcibly bussed in. But in this huge crowd that we were in at one point on Tuesday afternoon, very few young people, you know, no kids that I saw, no kids at all. Okay, it was a Tuesday, but no teenagers, no, just these kind of troll-like caucasoids. No people of color, nowhere, hundreds of people. There might have been 1,000 people at this one rally. Not a single African-American, Hispanic-American, nothing. Just these kind of sign-holding white people, like, I don't know. I'm having a hard time trying to describe this. Matter of fact, I'm way off the topic. They're kind of like fleshed out ghosts, like what you would expect if you know, 1,000 people rose up out of graves, not with their skin rotting off, like their flesh rotting off, like you know, the zombies, but kind of like Cheney, you know, just pasty. And I oh Christ. All right, I'll get back on track when we come back. It gives you the shivers, the shudders, the haints. I mean, it's just like, oh my God.
Slouch over and cool like a hunchback. Don't discuss things, shout the last word. Put your good sense out the pasture. Drop your IQ, that's what I do. My advice to girls and guys who want to be a Nobel Prize finalist. Rocket scientists, try applying this. Keep the customers coming around. If you're smart, then you better start dumbing it down. Don't say anything too profound. Dumb it down. I want to hear you.
Did you wake up?
Mike Malloy Show, all substance, no abuse.
25 before the hour. So anyway, you know, I'm getting way off where I was trying to go with this thing, but just my own impressions of this American the Affordable Care Act and what's going to happen before the Supreme Court. And I get sidetracked into trying to describe, and it's impossible, what it's like to wade into a crowd of people who are... I'm lost for the right words. I guess there's no point in trying to describe what it feels like to wade into a sea of ignorance and a place where there's no creativity, no original thought, nothing but... Here I go again. Just kind of locked down responses, Pavlovian responses to somebody on a stage, a right winger on the stage, working the crowd like a violin, just playing them, and of course they respond. I don't know, man. It is so scary. I tend to avoid crowds like that for a number of reasons, not the least of which it just makes me wish I was not a citizen in a society that produces that kind of gross ignorance. Just monumental ignorance. And that depresses me because, you know, I am a citizen of this country. And right now, don't choose to leave. Don't choose to change that. But to know that there are millions of people like this, it's like Land of the Living Dead. Without the flesh coming off the bones. I mean, they look like normal people. It's just too much, unbelievably. The level of ignorance and willingness to be milked like a big fat cow by these right wingers who just suck everything out of these people, all their energy, all their thought processes, and use that energy to forward this fascist game plan for this country. Dear God, I'm. But what I was trying to get to is that, you know, there's a lot of discussion among some of us at this conference. Some of the organizers and some of the people who participated as to the possible outcomes. And at first, the outcome that got most attention was a 5-4 decision in favor of the Affordable Care Act, with Justice Kennedy once again being the swing vote. The Catholics, though, on this panel, and there are what? Are there six Catholics? I think there are six Catholics. And even though one of them, Sotomayor, is considered a liberal, the prevailing idea now is that the Catholics are going to pave the way for a Rick Santorum at least to have a chance to become president of the United States, because he is a Rome Catholic, not a Roman Catholic, but Rome. Rick Santorum's brand of Catholicism would work inside the Vatican much better than it works inside the United States. But, you know, when you consider Fat Tony Scalia and Sammy the Fish Alito and some of these other hardcore Catholic mafia types, they don't want a Catholic like Newt Gingrich. Oh, feh. I mean, Newt Gingrich to them is not really a Catholic. He's, you know, he adopted Catholicism so he could get next to his animatronic wife. Beep, boop, boop, beep, boop, boop. But, you know, Newt Gingrich is as much a Catholic as he is an oak tree. So the discussions started out, okay, this bill is going to, not bill, but this hearing is going to, the court is going to rule in favor of the Affordable Care Act 5-4. And then the more we talked about it, the more, no, the ruling is going to go against it 5-4. And there was some brief entertainment of the idea based on Supreme Court precedent that it might be even 7-2 in favor of the Affordable Care Act. 7-2 in favor, because there is so much precedent to allow the Congress to write this kind of legislation and keep it within the parameters of the Constitution. But the more there was even talk of an 8-1 decision in favor of the ACA, with the only holdout, of course, being the dunce that sits over there in the corner and never opens his mouth to question anybody. And of course, that would be Uncle Clarence. Uncle Clarence does nothing. He just sits there. And when the hearings are over, you know, he'll traipse back to Fat Tony's office and just get his orders.
What do I do, Fat Tony?
Well, this is what you do. So, 8-1, 7-2. Oddly, there was no talk of 6-3. 5-4. That was the initial. But the more we talked about it, the more we realized what the agenda of this right-wing Supreme Court is and has been. Even though a couple of members have come and gone, the agenda of this right-wing Supreme Court since December 12th, 2000, is to utterly and completely upend and destroy, finally and forever, the idea of a democratic republic that responds to the will of the people. And in its place, a totalitarian form of government that looks like democracy, but it is not. It is run by the corporatists. It is run by the capitalists. It is run by the money. So from the outside looking in, people say, you know, not of the society. Well, look, they got three branches of government. They have elections. they have a Supreme Court that adjudicates issues that may or may not infringe on their constitution. They have freedom. They have freedom of speech. They even have free speech zones. What more could you want? And they allow, you know, until it becomes kind of a pain in the ass, they allow demonstrators like the Occupy people, or maybe a parade now and then by people who want to help the homeless or the veterans or women's rights. And as far as women's rights, their women aren't wearing burkas. Their women have a right to vote. Their women can work in the public marketplace. Their women can have all the freedoms that their men can. So to someone looking from the outside, okay, but from someone inside who is conscious, who is politically aware, an effort over the past 12 years has been to push this country into a totalitarian state that looks like what it is not and functions the way any totalitarian state would function. With a few little, you know, this is not the 1930s, so it wouldn't be like Franco's Spain or Mussolini's Italy or Hitler's Germany. Or those are the three that always come up, you know. So it wouldn't look specifically like that at all. Much more subtle.
Be Cheney's America.
But you could tell that it was not what it appeared to be if you spent any time here. So if there was a consensus amongst those of us who were trying to figure out, you know, read the tea leaves, and I asked so many of the guests that I had, you know, what do you think? Is it going to pass? So many of them thought it was going to pass. But these are people who are, I think, willing themselves into believing that this country still has a chance for to save itself. Not that the Affordable Care Act is anything other than what it is. You know, I tried to make it clear. My position was single payer. And if not that, at least a public option for people who did not want to participate in this filthy, degenerate capitalist marketplace of selling policies that are not there to help you pay your medical bills, but are there to make a profit and to screw you when you finally need a payoff from an insurance company. That's my position. Single payer, period. So what do you do? I mean, do you burn down what we have now until single payer comes along? Well, the Obama administration tried something that I think was kind of ridiculous, and that is this ACA. Setting themselves up for challenges, setting themselves up for arguments, setting themselves up to be manipulated, their words, their actions, their deeds manipulated by the right wing in this country. And a lot of the people that I interviewed said essentially the same thing. People who are in policy positions or lobbying positions around this issue, that the Obama administration maybe shouldn't have done it this way. Maybe should have gone. You go all in or you don't go in at all in a situation like this. Should have pushed for single payer. Should have insisted on a public option. But they didn't do that. The Obama administration and the Democratic leadership didn't do that. So how's it going to turn out? I'm going to try to guess at that coming back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
When all our rights will be taken away, would you have guessed that a little collie weed could ever bring all these bunches in a field? What it feels like we're living in a police state. You broke the law, so accept your fate. They pull your car over and they beat you too.
Before the hour. Okay, so in my totally worthless opinion as to what's going to happen, I think the Affordable Care Act, the part of it under challenge, the mandate, the forced mandate, you have to buy insurance, I think that's going to be declared unconstitutional and this bill is going to go down the toilet. And I think the Supreme Court is going to rule beyond like they did in Citizens United. They're going to take it one step further and say the whole thing is unconstitutional. There's been some talk that the mandate section, if that were declared, that's the only part that's under review, judicial review, if that were declared unconstitutional, the other aspects would hold. I don't think so. I think what is at play here is politics. This is not about judicial review at all. I don't think any of these right-wing justices that now sit on the Supreme Court are there to decide the actions of the U.S. Congress as being constitutional or unconstitutional. They are there to grease the way, especially the Catholics, to grease the way for a totalitarian form of government in this country as surreptitiously as they can. Some of the rulings are obviously proto-fascist, but obvious only to people who understand how fascism creeps into a society. For the average bobblehead, like those people that were gathered in the park, no, they don't have a clue. They couldn't define fascism for you anyway. But to give you an example of the hostility and the asininity of some of these justices, there is something about Alito. I'm sorry, about Scalia, that is petulant, like he's like a petulant child. He's like the kid that got bullied back when you were in elementary school, the kind of rotund, thumb-sucking little boy who, and it's a shame he got bullied, but he did. The thumb-sucking little mama's boy. You know the type. And thank God we now are trying to educate our children not to bully children like that because they might grow up to become a Justice Scalia. And then the whole country is going to feel his attempt at revenge for all his bullying when he was a little pasty-faced, thumb-sucking mama's boy. But Fat Tony, some of his questions are they go beyond being patronizing when he's questioning attorneys arguing a case before the Supreme Court. They go beyond being patronizing and become almost babyfied. For example, Scalia yesterday, according to published reports, I don't know, I wasn't there, but according to the New York Times, Scalia discussed the universal need to eat. If there's a universal need for health insurance, because eventually everyone has to have medical care. That's a given. It's how we're going to pay for it. That's the issue. So Scalia immediately trivializes it down to the point of the little thumb-sucking, booger-eating mama's boy that I'm sure he was when he was, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12, 13 years old. He said, quote, "Everybody has to buy food sooner or later, so you define the market as food. Therefore, everybody is in the market. Therefore, you can make people buy broccoli." End quote. Now, that's the kind of gibberish, trivialized, infantilized language that Fat Tony uses in a case before the Supreme Court. Sammy the Fish, Alito, is almost as bad. Alito said he talked about the market for burial services had features similar to the one for health care. Well, what the hell does that mean? Chief Justice John Roberts, who I didn't realize could also get down to Fat Tony's level and talk like a child when Chief Justice Roberts asked why the government should not require people to buy cell phones to use to call emergency service providers. What the hell is this? To think that members of what is supposed to be the highest court in the land, where weighty issues of constitutionality are decided, that they would say things like, well, you could be forced to buy broccoli. Well, you could be forced to buy a cell phone. What is that? On the other hand, Justice Ginsburg seemed to agree with the idea that the ACA, and the part under challenge, merely regulates how people pay for services that they are virtually certain to use at some point in their lives, and therefore is well within the authority granted to the federal government by the Constitution. And Ginsburg said that the mandate, the part under challenge, was a response to the fact that uninsured people receive free health care anyway that ends up being paid by you and me and the bobbleheads standing in the park raising their dumbass signs. Justice Ginsburg said, the problem is they're making the rest of us pay. And therefore, the Congress has a right to decide how that is going to be distributed, the Commerce Clause, how that's going to be distributed among Americans. How do you do it? Insist that everybody has insurance. Justice Sotomayor said Americans would not stand for a system in which children in danger of dying were turned away from emergency rooms. Justice Sotomayor, surely you know that the right-wingers would do just that. They're doing it now. And then they pat themselves on the back for it by saying, oh, well, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, booby. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Truth Seekers, Mike.